It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Almost a dozen states have requested and received a waiver from the federal education law known as No Child Left Behind. The law was a major Bush administration initiative, and it passed with bipartisan support, but it's been a thorn in the side for many local school districts who have chafed under its requirements and its system of escalating punishments for those schools that don't measure up to its standards. So when the Obama White House said it would grant waivers to the law, some states jumped immediately. But our guest today, New Hampshire Education Commissioner Virginia Barry, decided not to seek a waiver for the Granite State. Barry says there's more than meets the eye here, that a waiver could force some changes we might not like. For example, altering how teachers and principals are evaluated and how standardized test results are reported. The No Child Left Behind debate is just one of many facing Commissioner Barry this year. The legislature's been considering dozens of education bills. These include a new law, which received national attention, allowing parents to have alternative coursework provided for their children if they object to the way a particular subject is taught. Today in The Exchange, Education Commissioner Virginia Barry joins us, and let's hear from you, too. What do you think her department's role should be in overseeing and helping local schools? What aspects of public education in this state could be made stronger? It's your chance to talk to Commissioner Barry about your local public schools. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Barry, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, in deciding not to seek a waiver, Commissioner Barry, you said New Hampshire needs an education system that works for New Hampshire students. Why would seeking a waiver counter that value, a New Hampshire system for New Hampshire students?
Great. It's a great question. I think first I would like to really make sure that people understand that there is still an opportunity to seek a waiver. We do have an opportunity for this September. Should we choose as a state to go ahead and seek the waiver, that would best meet the needs of our students. I think it's really important to emphasize the elements of what the waiver really required. Initially, like any waiver, people immediately respond by thinking, oh, we can eliminate things that we have to do now. In fact, the waiver really, in a very, very concrete way, indicated that if you seek a waiver, you have to be prepared to meet the requirements of the waiver. And so we had to really look at that and analyze it.
So it's trading one set of requirements for another.
Another set of requirements. I think the requirements that are part of the waiver are very realistic for our state, but they do take time. We need to be able to sort of assimilate some of these ideas. For example, one of the areas that we're talking about and have been talking about in New Hampshire is college and career readiness for all students. And so just the definition alone, as soon as people hear that, you know, the first thing they say is, well, how can you make sure all students are college and or career ready, making those choices? And so we have to define what does all mean and how do we respond in our public school instructional practices. So I think that's very important. New Hampshire has really been a leader in the United States because we have been using the language of multiple pathways. We have been talking over the last 5-6 years, really, how can we differentiate instruction? How can we find new ways, such as our charter schools, our virtual learning academy, our innovation networks that we are also a leader in the United States? So really looking at what does college and career expectations mean for all of our students? Another element of the waiver is supporting effective instruction and leadership. And that really amounted to developing a state, and I hate the word controlled, but essentially in the waiver, a state-controlled system that looks at multiple ways to measure teacher performance as it relates to student achievement, and also to measure particularly principal leadership as it relates to whole school achievement. And so when we did the analysis of the waiver, that particular principle is the one that we really felt that we were not positioned to be able to put forward the waiver. And so in November, we met with our Superintendents Association, and they were very responsive, and our Principal Association, and we essentially formed a task force. And on the task force, principals, teachers, superintendents, policymakers, parents, school board members, and to really talk about how could we put together a system that would allow us to evaluate teachers in a fair and consistent manner in our state. how could we provide the kind of support that teachers need on an ongoing basis, professional development, and have an evaluation system that allowed comparability within the state so that we would be able to meet all teachers' needs.
So it's not that you're opposed to getting a waiver from No Child Left Behind. It's that the waiver requires certain things and New Hampshire's just not ready.
Exactly, exactly.
And that last piece that you mentioned, Commissioner Barry, are you basically talking about merit pay there when you talk about teacher effectiveness evaluation and so forth?
Well, one of the elements is looking at compensation. And, you know, in our state, there are different districts that have looked at compensation relative to differentiating based on content areas, also reward systems that would identify effective teaching, highly effective teaching. But again, we don't really have the language yet in our state. And if we're really going to do this kind of system, one, I don't believe in my lifetime we're going to see state control over teacher and leader evaluation, but a thoughtful process, a system, a set of guidelines that we can offer to our school districts that say, if you have a system, these are the kinds of things that you need to be focused on to be sure that it is a fair and consistent system.
Well, and as you know, Commissioner Barry, you know, for many educators, No Child Left Behind has been the law they love to hate the most. The list of complaints is a long one. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Here's an email that we received this morning from James, who says he's been teaching chemistry for 3 decades. He's been working through the NCLB program since its inception. He says, during this time, the emphasis shifted from motivating my students through innovation to doing well on a standardized test. This mandated and underfunded program obviously failed. Why would the state consider not opting out of this failed program? The program costs the state a substantial amount of money that is desperately needed in our schools. Also, James says, by opting out of the program, wouldn't the education bureaucracy at the state level be reduced? So I'm sure you've heard complaints from other educators like James. They can't stand No Child Left Behind. They feel, you know, reined in by it. And please, you know, get rid of it.
Right. Well, I think that's a fair, yes, every day we hear that No Child Left Behind is really a system that's failed our students, our children, and as of recently, it's really failed our communities because it really kind of positions people to feel very negative about their schools when they read in the newspaper that this school is in need of improvement or this district is in need of improvement. So I would say that most educators across the United States are in total agreement with James. But one of the misconceptions is that we get rid of No Child Left Behind, and now we have a different a system that we have to be able to put in place. The whole notion behind the waiver is that we set the bar even higher for our students, and we set the bar higher for all students. And that means putting together an accountability system that allows us to have multiple ways for assessing our students.
Instead of just that test that comes every year,
exactly.
Or every other year.
There will always be a national statewide test that allows us to look at our state performance across other states. Overall, and I think everyone's aware of this, there's been quite a bit of information in the media, that overall New Hampshire does pretty well. If we were to use the NECAP as just a standard, and even the NAEP, the national assessment, we do pretty well. But when we look at those tests, they essentially test for different elements, and they give us a certain set of information. Where we would like to see our state accountability system go is to really look at the kinds of formative assessment on a daily basis that tells us where students are and where they need to go to be college and career ready. So we trade off one set to develop one that would be a better form of assessment that enables our students to really develop the knowledge and the skills that they need to be successful.
You know what I'm wondering, and boy, I've been doing this show for 16 years, and so I've talked to a couple education commissioners, and I remember No Child Left Behind and people trying to adapt to it and change it. I wonder, Commissioner Barry, how much incentive there is to go for this waiver right now, given that there could be a new administration in the fall, and the new administration will have a whole different view toward what education policy should be. I mean, if President Obama is reelected, then fine, you can continue with your current plan. But why do all this planning now when it could be completely different next year?
Right. And that's, you know, obviously that was one of the first responses we had from educators in the state and leaders. You know, if we do all this, what does it really mean if it changes again? But I think here again, it's really important to recognize that regardless of who is our next president, that we're talking about a national standard of high-level accountability for all students. We have no reason to believe that there's going to be a change, regardless of who our next president might be. I think these reform efforts have given all educators an opportunity to take pause about what we're about as a nation, what we're about as a state, and what is it that we want to do. Children live in the present and the future. They don't live in the past. It's our responsibility to look at these reform efforts and determine as a state whether we can support them and are we committed to high-level accountability for all of our students and providing programs and the quality of instruction that's necessary to prepare our children in the state of New Hampshire for their future. And that's really what it's getting us to do. We're having much higher level conversations across all levels of education, teachers, leaders, parents, school board members, superintendents. I really believe policymakers, we're starting to say, what does this all mean? And I think that's healthy.
So even though many have struggled with No Child Left Behind here in New Hampshire and many have complained, are you saying, Commissioner Barry, that in one sense, it kind of gave people a kick in the pants? It was a wake-up call?
I think so, yes. I would say that that's probably true. But now we're in a different time. Now we have to look at it in a very different, from a different perspective.
And last question on this, and then we'll move on to the many bills in the legislature that have happened this year. You're talking to the House Education Commission Committee, later today.
Yes.
2-hour sit-down with the House Education Committee. Is this going to be a big topic, No Child Left Behind, the waiver, and so forth?
Absolutely. I believe that our House Education Committee wants the right decision to be made. They want to understand what are the elements of the waiver process. What is it that we need to do in our state to be able to prepare for the waiver. And I'm not sure that they have a position at this point one way or another, but I think that they are concerned that we make the right decision. And quite frankly, I see this as a great opportunity. I'm really pleased that they've asked for this opportunity to really talk about this and make the right decision. So I'm looking forward to the meeting.
All right. And we will talk in just a minute about the many, many education-related debates in the state legislature this year. We'll also start taking your calls after a short break. 1-800-892-6477 is our number here in the Exchange. 1-800-892-6477. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org. It's your chance to talk to Commissioner Virginia Barry about education in New Hampshire and your own local schools. What do you think the role of her department should be in overseeing the schools? What aspects of public education in New Hampshire might be made stronger? Let us know what you think. 1-800-892-6477, and we'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Capital Well Clean Water Center since 1986. Well drilling and service for all of New Hampshire. Capital Well Clean Water Center, Lancaster, Dunbarton, and at capitalwell.com. And Tupelo Music Hall presenting Woodstock icon Melanie March 9th in White River Junction and March 10th in Londonderry. Tickets at tupelohall.com. More with New Hampshire Education Commissioner Virginia Barry on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, proposed reform of the U.S. corporate tax code. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly cloudy for most of the state with a chance of a shower in southern areas of the state. Highs close to 50, cloudy, some rain or snow showers across the North Country today, highs around 40. Tonight, cloudy, lows 20 to 25 in the North Country, around 30 in central parts of the state and 30 to 35 across southern New Hampshire. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, State Education Commissioner Virginia Barry is with us on current challenges and new initiatives in Granite State Public Schools. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Where do you see public education in New Hampshire as strong? Where do you see it needing work? Again, it's your opportunity to talk with Commissioner Barry about your own local schools. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Barry, let's talk about the many, many education-related debates in the state legislature this year. And first, broadly, we received a few weeks back an email from a group called Defending New Hampshire Public Education, blasting this legislature for being what this person called the most anti-public education legislature New Hampshire has ever seen. Pretty tough criticism. What do you think? I mean, has this legislature been anti-public education?
Well, I probably would use different words than anti-public education. I'd like to, you know, as commissioner, I'd like to think that policymakers are responding to the public. and whether it's one individual that has a serious concern or complaint or 100 individuals. So I think that, you know, that's what makes New Hampshire unique. And so as commissioner, I have to believe that the many kinds of legislative issues that we're being faced with are a function of the public. And so I believe that the role that we have at the policy level, at the Department of Education level, is to analyze these concerns, to determine whether or not we can find solutions, to recognize that we do need to change public education and that we are working very hard. But I think the key element is communication. I think that we need to communicate. We need to be providing the public with factual information. And we need to be sure that they are not just getting opinions, but they are getting factual information that help them to ask better questions and more questions about how we could improve continuous improvement of our public education system. So I can see both sides of it. And I think that the Department of Education has a role in helping to bring a balance so that, most important, the morale in our state in public education, our teachers, our leaders who are dealing every day with helping the children of the state of New Hampshire, need to feel that they have public support. So I feel that that's a critical role that we have. But communication, communication, communication.
Well, and you are communicating with them for 2 hours again today.
Yes, and I truly appreciate that opportunity.
You mentioned morale. You know, that's real interesting. I mean, what do you think the morale is right now of educators in our state, those teachers who are kind of in the trenches?
Yeah, I think that overall, and I can say this honestly because I do work with teachers and leaders every day, they just feel that everyone's all over public education. And, you know, they're on the ground dealing with complex learning is not easy. We live in a society where we don't value the human mind the same way we necessarily value the human body. And so for teachers, trying to work and differentiate learning and change the way schools are working today, and, you know, people talk about transformation, and it's a great word, but transformation requires not just a verbal discussion, but enormous change process. And I have faith in what I'm seeing, and I visit schools all of the time, that teachers are working to understand what this transformation means. It is a threatening time, and they need support. And so when I say morale, I think it's very debilitating every day in this particular legislative session for people to feel that the work that they're doing is not being valued. And I think it's important to point out, again, the factual information. Over 49% of our students in the state of New Hampshire move on to four-year colleges. About 28% go on to community colleges. We have one of the lowest dropout rates. And while that was under debate this year, I believe that our governor, that was probably the most significant decision made because it had a diffusive impact in the way we think. We owe it to all children to help them succeed, to graduate from high school, to give them the best start. And so it has a trickle-down effect in everything that we're doing. So I think while that was open for debate, at the same time New Hampshire was debating the 18 mandatory age, other states were saying, why aren't we like New Hampshire? So again, that kind of information needs to get out there. And so building morale in an honest way to say, how do we make this system work better for our children? Because public New Hampshire public education isn't going to be dismantled over the next few years. It needs to be supported.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that it's one thing to say we need to do all this, we need to do more and better, but it's also a time of diminishing local resources for public education.
Right, and I think that signals just about every element of our society, whether it's the environment, public education, medicine. We need to use our resources differently. And when we talk about doing things different, it takes time. It's the human condition. People are like, well, what do you mean do it different? We don't have enough to start with. So we have to really come up with other systems that support it. It means doing things differently, and that can be very threatening. I know you mentioned earlier the Virtual Learning Academy. When I first started 3 years ago, I was sitting in a task force with legislators, and people are like, you know, we have to get rid of this Virtual Learning Academy.
This is a charter school that allows students to take online coursework.
Exactly. 3 years later, we have 17,600 approximately credits being generated, students doing credit recovery to be able to graduate, students taking advanced placement classes that are no longer available because of resources, students graduating early in many cases, moving on when ready. We have many students taking second and third languages. The Virtual Learning Academy has essentially helped, not competed with, but has helped to utilize resources in a different way. Again, New Hampshire is a leader in this area. We worked very closely with the state of Florida. Our Virtual Learning Academy is really, as a charter school, has had a profound effect on the way we all work together. This is not them out there providing a curriculum. This is all of us working together to support our students.
And we did a whole program a couple months back, Commissioner Barry, on the whole concept of virtual learning. Got lots of praise for VLACs and also some people who were concerned. Here's a posting on our Facebook page from Mike that just came in. He said, last year I heard Dr. Barry promote alternative ways to get high school credits with programs such as VLACs, again, virtual learning. When I investigated VLACs, Mike says, I found that they paid teachers very low wages, little to no benefits. Why promote a system that in the long run will cause more young and talented teachers to leave the profession and weaken our local public schools as a whole? So there's a vote of concern against VLACs. What do you think?
I don't know the salaries that are paid at the Virtual Learning Academy, but I do know that I have met both virtually and in person with the teachers that choose to teach in the Virtual Learning Academy. I think it's 99.something% of those teachers are certified teachers, and I think something like 88% of them are teachers from New Hampshire, and we do have a number of teachers from Maine. So I'm sorry I can't speak to the benefits, but I can speak to the commitment and the passion and the interest that the teachers who choose, and I think that's very important, choose to participate in a virtual learning design, seem very, very content with the great work they're doing.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Barry, let's go to the phones. And May is calling from Lyme. Hi, May. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for doing this program.
Sure.
One of the things, first of all, I'd like to say, I think vast majority of teachers do an absolutely excellent job, so I'm very supportive of teachers. The one criticism or thought I have on the system in general is that I think we should be spending more, there should be more of an emphasis on health and wellness in the schools and less on sports. I think sports should go under the town categories of recreation department and not within the schools.
So health and wellness, how so, May, in terms of healthy food or more recess, or what exactly you're saying there?
Well, in some places they don't have recess. I think
right.
I think there should be definitely foods need to be looked at. I think the governor's wife has been absolutely incredible in taking this on, and she's done an excellent job. But we need to continue on that, what's going into people's bodies. But also in general, I think a lot just calming down children and just giving them the ability to focus. What goes into the body affects that.
Okay. May, thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think, Commissioner Barry?
Well, I think what May's talking about is really having a balance in our schools, and I agree, completely agree with that. I think that having, the emphasis on physical and social-emotional health in students is very important, and it can be incorporated in the day-to-day. These are local decisions, though. I really want to emphasize that I've actually been to the Lyme School. It's a great school. I think there is a very balanced approach at the Lyme K-8 school, but it is a local decision. Parents need to be involved when they're concerned that the balance isn't in their school. When for example, recess is eliminated, it is concerning. Children need time during the day. And so sometimes decisions may be made exclusive of what may be necessarily in the best interest of developmental issues for children. So parents need to be very involved in that process. Grandparents need to be involved. We see more and more every day I get calls from grandparents because they're very actively involved in their grandchildren's work and school, and they're concerned about their future. So I applaud your commitment to that, and I really encourage you to stay involved with your local schools.
So that's interesting. So Department of Education at the state level doesn't say to local districts, you must provide X hours of recess, X hours of gym, X hours for lunch. You guys don't do that at all. You don't have recommendations or anything? Or
we have minimum state minimum requirements, but as far as those, that type of specificity, no, we do not require that.
So minimum requirements for math, reading, no minimum requirements for?
Minimum requirements for the number of hours. We've moved from days to hours that schools have to be in session, so there's a great deal of flexibility. I mean, there was a time just barely, 6 years ago, where everybody took the same vacation. Now districts have the opportunity to be more flexible and when they select their vacations. We have districts that are adding time onto the day, not to exceed 8 hours a day, and looking at professional development differently. So the districts have a great deal of flexibility, and that's something that comes out loud and clear, because when and if the department were to try to impose, I would say, or guide or influence a decision, very much the local control element becomes part of that process in rulemaking.
It's interesting, though, because I have talked to local educators and the superintendent and the principal and the teachers about some of the concerns that you have made, that recess is, you know, too short, that lunch is, you know, 5 or 10 minutes and they're gobbling their food, that gym is only once a week at the elementary level and once a quarter at the middle school level. And yet when you talk to the local administrators, they say, well, the state and the feds tell us we have to do XXX, so there's no time left over. So it's kind of like each side is pointing the finger at each other and saying, well, you're making me do this, so I can't.
Right. Well, I think, again,
I mentioned
the human condition. Well, it's very easy to say, well, you know, we have these federal laws, we have these state laws, and so on and so forth. But overall, I would like to comment that there is a pretty good balance in our state. And while it is frustrating that we have to follow laws or regulations, overall, most of them, if you really do an analysis, really do benefit children in the long run. And by the way, if over time they don't, they change.
May, thanks a lot for calling in. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And let's go next to Bill in Concord. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
Good.
I can only speak to my family's experience. Both of our children are my son's a senior, getting ready to graduate this year, are in a Concord Christian Academy here. And like many of the private schools, they don't offer a PE elective. And the state requires 160 hours for a student to graduate. I think they call that, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, I think they call that one credit. And my son, this senior year, woefully lacking. And somebody turned us on to VLACs, and now he's almost done with the first course there, which will give him a half credit, or the equivalent of 80 hours. And somebody might wonder, how do you do PE through virtual learning?
Yeah,
but
right.
He has a conversation with the instructor once a week. There are exams, there are modules he has to do, and then there's checklists he has to check off to verify that he went to Planet Fitness and did this, that, and the other. And when he's done, he'll have, with a combination of things we can already prove that we've logged over the years, that he'll have all his PE requirements when he's done with VLACs.
So, Bill, pleased with VLACs, and we had an earlier comment who was less than pleased with VLACs. So there you go, Commissioner Barry, giving people some flexibility to get these achievements done.
Right. I think one of the words I'd like people to hear today, and that is, you know, the focus that New Hampshire has on multiple pathways, that language is really about, you know, we have so many parents concerned and worried that their child aren't being successful. So one of the things that we are learning is we have to have multiple pathways to meet the needs of kids and families and communities. And each time we introduce a new innovation that helps us student to be competent, and just like your son, be able to do it so he can be successful and feel that he's achieved, is really critical. And part of this process of change is introducing new ways of thinking about how we can accomplish and support students to be competent as they go into their world. And I think that's just a great example, and I appreciate you calling in.
And again, we keep talking VLACs. That's Virtual Learning Academy School, if you're just joining us. You know, I want to ask you about another bill that became law, actually, this year. Lots of bills have been debated concerning public education, as you know, Commissioner Barry, but not a lot of them end up becoming law. But here's one that did, over Governor Lynch's veto, is the one that allows parents to have alternative coursework provided when they object to the way a particular subject is being taught. This new law gained national attention. I mean, you know, Huffington Post, New York Times, all sorts of national media picked up on this. How do you feel about it?
Well, I'm very disappointed. I'm very disappointed in it because I think, quite frankly, as a professional educator, it's shocking that we are here again is an example of taking away from our teachers and leaders confidence in the development of curriculum and standards and the way we teach in our schools. I can tell you without exception that if a parent objects to a curriculum or a particular reading and works closely with their local school, with the exception of when a media takes a very, very specific issue, we work together with parents. There are choices in our literary selections. There are choices in science. There are many, many ways to handle this. But the message was not a good one. And I know it gets overused. People want to say, well, are teachers really a profession? It is a profession. And I would be hard-pressed to think that any person, any one of us, experiencing any serious medical disease would be telling our doctor what protocol to follow. So I am disappointed, but I believe we'll live and learn through it, and we'll begin to see exactly where the individuals who feel that this is a huge issue in our state really land on what kinds of things we would do different in our schools.
Well, this is a brand new law, really, so
exactly.
We'll see where the chips may fall. But is this part of what you mean when you said about 15 minutes ago, Commissioner Berry, that this is a threatening time for educators?
Absolutely. Absolutely. again, five cases does not make change in philosophy. It's really, it could be five cases, it could be 50. It could be 5,000, but to my knowledge, in our state, that has not been the case. And it's unfortunate because that is an example where we take away the expertise and knowledge and the importance of knowledge transfer in our schools to give all students access to information. It could be debilitating in many respects for public education.
Are there any bills that came up in the legislature this year that you think might help the mission of public education in New Hampshire?
There were so many.
There's a lot to keep
track
of.
All of them, took on, a different phase in looking at public education. I can't really identify one specifically that I think really is going to influence education to the degree that the legislator would like to see.
Well, there was another one that got a lot of attention, allowing businesses to contribute to a pool of money that parents could then access to use for private schools. So it would be like a tax credit for businesses,
yes.
And that money could be used to send more kids to private schools. I wonder how you feel about that one.
Yes, but that's a great one. I'm sorry I didn't really identify that. I think that when that first, the whole notion of the tax credit came forward, one of the things that happens in the department is we're asked, do we oppose something or can we support it? And the tax credit issue goes back to the multiple pathways, goes back to supporting all students. I'm a firm believer that if a parent is committed to a school, whether it's a religious-based school, an independent school, that's important to that family and the likelihood of success of that student is increased. It does not take away from public education. It's if we can determine that the methodology and the formula will not negatively impact education.
Okay. And we will go to a short break. More of your calls as soon as we come back.
NHPR is starting off our March fund drive with the Jumpstart Challenge. When we raise $120,000 by the end of the first day of the drive, March 7th, we'll receive an additional $12,000. And we're raising the ante this time, too, because when we hit that goal, it will jumpstart our efforts to shorten the drive, hopefully by about 2 days. Your gift today counts toward this challenge. Call 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Cambridge Trust Company of New Hampshire, building lasting relationships and providing thoughtful, independent investment trust and wealth management services. CambridgeTrust.com. And Hearing Solutions New England, where audiologists diagnose hearing loss and dispense hearing aids in Nashua, Manchester, Concord, and online at HearingSolutionsNE.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the debate over New Hampshire's struggling mental health care system. Email us your questions or comments before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And then join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, New Hampshire's Education Commissioner, Virginia Barry, is here discussing the latest challenges facing New Hampshire's schools and some new initiatives. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you think the role of Virginia Barry's department should be in overseeing local schools, in helping them? How could public education in the Granite State be made even stronger? It's your chance again to talk to Commissioner Barry about your own local public school system. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Barry, let's go right back to the calls. And Teresa's calling from Jaffrey. Hi, Teresa. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. My name is Teresa Morris. I'm currently the president for the New Hampshire Association for Gifted Education. And my frustration is in a lovely conversation this morning, and I know there's a lot of research out there that has shown over the years that the No Child Left Behind Act has particularly hurt our very top-achieving students, and it's great to hear new initiatives coming. I think the frustration I have is that because there's no mandate to serve these students in our New Hampshire public schools, we cannot get a voice at the table, and quite often these new initiatives or strategies come to our state. We can't get representation for our students. And I've heard you mention many times this morning about multiple pathways for our children to succeed, which is a great thing. But if there's no mandate there, those pathways just don't exist for these students.
Or and, resources, right,
right,
Teresa?
They can't. They've just told that, you know, sorry, we don't have the resources, and that's okay. These kids, and then the parents are just kind of left with very unhappy, sad, frustrated parents.
Well, Teresa, thanks for calling in. This is a comment we get all the time when we talk about No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, well, that would have been a great suggestion to go to the legislators with, for them to look, you know, at students that, you know, while I sort of lean away from using the term gifted, I really think the language of move on when ready, that we have many, many students that are very, very highly competent, very bright students that have skill sets that far surpass some of our understanding of children. And so those students need the kind of support. But that would be an example to me where legislative initiatives that would allow us to be able to look more carefully at this differentiation of students across all levels. So I agree with you. I do want to say, though, in support of many of our schools, that there are programs that do support children that have developed, you know, these kinds of intellectual skills and really need to be challenged more within the curriculum of their environment. But I certainly would support. I know that this is, since I've been commissioner the last 3 years, there's been many, many conversations from parents about supporting gifted programs. So I encourage you to really get that kind of political support as you move forward.
This gets into something that you and I were discussing during the break, so listeners weren't privy to that conversation. But it's the idea, Commissioner Barry, that your commissionership is kind of unique in New Hampshire, isn't it? Because schools are locally funded, locally based for the most part. I mean, obviously, there's state funding. So unlike the transportation commissioner or the environmental services commissioner, you can't say, okay, here's my budget, here's what I want to do with it, make it so. You kind of are operating at a more, you're cajoling people or encouraging people, but you have a different set of powers, don't you?
Right. Well, essentially, the commissioner of New Hampshire, most people are not aware of this because not a day goes by when someone will call in from a district and say, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Like our caller who says, hey, please, commissioner,
exactly.
Could you improve gifted education?
Exactly. So it is a unique position. When I talk with commissioners from other states, for example, this past year with the legislators, you know, they wanted to eliminate the commission or eliminate the department. Most people are familiar with that kind of direction that there was definitely moving toward. I do not have the authority that commissioners have in many states. Now, from an organizational standpoint, you could step back and say, well, it kind of is a futile effort then. But I think there's another way of looking at it. I think that the ability to bring about change lies in the ability to influence and work collaboratively with people, because sustainability of change is really essential. So while maybe one state during the race to the top or during any of these federal initiatives really had the authority to say, you will do this. You will do this or you will not be funded. In New Hampshire, we didn't. And so we had to rely on the goodwill and the spirit of belief in the importance of public education. And we have to work together. And I believe in the long run, the sustainability of the innovative changes and the way that we're going to bring about better ways of providing public education will come from the people, because they will believe in it as we move forward.
Because you have to get buy-in. You can't just say make it so. You
exactly.
have to get buy-in.
Exactly. And just for those people who have resisted all the elements of Race to the Top, I have to say that in many of those states, while they received the funding, they haven't been able to necessarily get across people to believe that these changes could happen. So I think in the long run, we'll be in a better place in New Hampshire.
I want to ask you, Commissioner Barry, about the New England Common Assessment Program. These are the standardized tests that a lot of kids take. And by the way, Teresa, thanks for that call. The NECAP results were recently released at the end of last month. A couple questions about it. Just broadly first, Commissioner Barry, what's the takeaway for us from these latest NECAP results?
Well, we've seen a slight improvement in mathematics, and we've seen what I refer to as a leveling off in reading. And so standardized tests, they have a purpose, but they don't tell us the whole story. They have a purpose. And so we look at our standardized test. We make a determination of are our reading programs in the state, is our focus on literacy, is it early enough, is it strong enough? So we look at all elements to determine where we need to go from here as it relates to reading and math. In the past year, there's been a very strong focus on mathematics. As we look at our students graduating and the notion of college and career ready, you know, what are the numeracy skills that our students need? What are the employable skills they need in mathematics? So there's been a huge effort this year to work closely with our two-year and four-year institutions and our K-12s to look at our math curriculum and really make a movement towards curriculum. So the NECAP has a purpose. It helps us kind of look at the bigger picture.
Here's a comment from our Public Insight Network. This is Richard in Amherst, who says, our primary measure of learning in New Hampshire is the annual NECAP testing. At the high school level, Richard says, students frequently underperform because the test has no consequences for them. It does have significant consequences for the school and district under NCLB requirements and ratings. And we've all seen those charts saying this district is, you know, in need of improvement. This district is considered failing. Richard says, has New Hampshire considered moving to a higher stakes requirement for high school students? Why or why not? Boy, this is something that keeps coming up. It's not like the SATs. You know, it's not like a regular in-class test. This is just to make the school district look good. And if a high school student says, well, I don't really care about the school district, he or she is just going to, you know, fill in the blank.
Right. Well, obviously that, you know, you're right. I mean, there's no debating this point. You know, I go to schools during the NECAPs at the high school level and, you know, there are breakfast programs. There's all kinds of, you know, the teachers are engaging students in
the little
level
kids get into
discussions.
It. You know, the tchotchkes and the snacks and
exactly.
stuff. But at the high school level, they're a little more
jaded. They're sort of like, you know, this really doesn't mean much to me. Who asked for what your NECAP scores are? So, yeah, I agree. It's a problem. I think that one thing to keep in mind, we have one more year of the NECAP. The state of New Hampshire has joined what's called Smarter Balance along with 27 other states. Smarter Balance is a different form of assessment. It hopefully is going to move us into higher level kinds of thinking relative to understanding our student performance, more problem-solving oriented. And so we're moving into that, and we'll be starting that assessment in 2014. So I couldn't agree more. I think that standardized test will always continue to be, at the high school level, a complex issue. But we are looking at yet another form of assessment, and that is a language what we refer to as competencies and proficiencies, and looking at supporting more innovative ways of assessing our students in our schools and determining when they graduate, having high-level assessments that allow us to look at performance and to be sure that our students have the literacy achievement, the ability to problem solve, articulate, write. So New Hampshire is going in a different way, and this is something that we'll be spending a great deal of time with this year as we continue to work with our high schools in innovation. How can we look at high-performance assessment that really tell us something? And unless statewide testing goes away, national testing, we're hoping to have in our New Hampshire accountability system high performance levels of assessment that look at individual students.
So by that you mean, you know, and I think you said this earlier, standardized tests will still be there, but there'll be other forms of assessment as well, whether
yes.
it's writing samples or PowerPoint presentations or whatever.
Or performance. I mean, you know, one school I've mentioned is Timberlane High School. It does a fabulous job of looking at what we consider to be high-level performance assessment of their students. I mean, at their within their high school, they have won national and international awards for documentaries of videos that if you really get into what it takes to do production work, it's enormous. It's enormous. And we know these students are being successful. So I think we are going into a new way of thinking about how to measure and be sure that when students go out into the world, that they're competent. they feel ready to get out there and do this kind of work that technology and the way the world is evolving is forcing us to think.
Here's an email that's related. This is from Janet in Portsmouth. I am concerned that the emphasis on testing and core requirements in elementary grades has crowded out time for hands-on projects, science activities, other things that can stimulate curiosity and a desire to learn. My son is in fourth grade and he's losing interest in school. Too many worksheets. Boy, just with my own kids, I do see they love those hands-on projects. They love the field trips that teach them about penguins or bats or whatever. Do you share Janet's concern that these types of things that get kids excited are being crowded up by testing? And can you tell her, Commissioner, that might change given your approach and your evolution on this?
Right. Well, obviously, I'm concerned also about if there were a school or a grade level that is putting emphasis on using worksheets to only prepare students for tests, that would not be a curriculum that I could support. We know what good teaching is. And this gets back to the very beginning of our discussion. We know what effective teaching is. We know what engages students in learning. And here again, this is where local control becomes really important. Not to tell teachers how to teach, but to work closely with schools and engage them in the importance of understanding, you know, what parents' expectations are for learning. And that we do know, without exception, and that problem-solving and project-oriented teaching is really the best way to go to really in the long term with students. So I wish I could answer that and say to you, oh, tomorrow I can go to the school and change it. But I do want to say one thing. One thing that we haven't touched on today, and that is teacher preparation. I'm really excited. The last 2 years, we've had a task force that's looking at teacher evaluation, and one of the elements is about teacher preparation, working very closely with higher education, both public and private, to really establish very significant ground rules for what effective teaching is in preparation programs. How do children learn best? How do children learn different? Really establishing different organizing principles about learning. And moving, as we retire more teachers in the state of New Hampshire and teachers that are staying in our system, giving them the support they need to move away from preparing just for a test, but creating a learning environment that supports children.
Let's take one more if we could. And this is Jessica in Laconia. And Jessica, thanks for joining us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks. We have two sons, and they are homeschooled entirely through the Virtual Learning Academy Charter School. My question is regarding competencies. This year, when we logged on to do all our work, all these new assignments popped up with a little C next to them that indicate that they are competency-based. My question is, who determines who what competencies are, and how are they formulated so that they're appropriate for students across the board? Students who maybe aren't necessarily planning to attend college, just basically how they develop those and where they come from.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it gets into what we talked a little bit about earlier, Commissioner Barry. Who sets the policy? Is it the state? Is it the local?
Right. Well, the competencies themselves come from our focus on literacy and numeracy. You know, what makes a competent student? What do we need to see in their performance to be sure that they've developed a level of competencies? So they're done in a variety of different ways. We right now have what we call grade level standards,
and that's at the state level.
At the state level, yes. And then individual schools develop competencies. For example, the math teachers will develop what competencies for algebra, geometry, the science teachers. So the teachers engage in the development of the competencies that across the board in the district would be an expectation.
So that's determined locally.
It's determined locally. Now, there's another level. We are seeing more and more of our schools working together. And there has been a discussion as of recently that maybe we need to have competencies that are developed across the entire state so that we have greater consistency. But when the competency movement initially started almost a decade ago, there was a very strong feeling in the state, don't let the Department of Education develop the competencies. But now that people are more immersed in the notion of graduating competent, proficient students, there has been more of a movement for districts to work together to establish competencies across the state. So essentially, all students that are taking algebra would develop a set of competencies, or that they would be working toward those competencies so that they could be proficient in mathematics and or literacy.
No, she's asking about the Virtual Learning Academy again. As I understand, that is one of several state-chartered charter schools.
Yes.
So does the state determine the standards for those schools that hold their charter with the state?
They function exactly the same. They are considered public schools. They function the same way. They develop their competencies based on grade-level standards, national standards for mathematics and or reading or foreign language or whatever courses that the students are taking.
Okay. Well, Jessica, thanks for the call and good luck with your sons. And one more question for you, Commissioner Barry. We talked earlier about the legislature. Education funding, as you know, has been a tussle between the state legislature and the local districts. That's not part of your department. You're really about the standards and working with the federal requirements and so forth. But I do wonder, as education commissioner, how you feel about the possibility of an amendment to the Constitution that would make education funding more a province of the legislature and less a province of the courts. Because some folks feel like this is the year that we could see one.
Right. Well, I want to say that, and I really want to emphasize this, is that the goal that we have in our state has to be critical, that every student has an equal opportunity to receive a quality education, regardless of where they live. We are deeply committed to that support, being able to utilize resources in a more effective way. Every student deserves that right. And if there's a way that we can provide greater flexibility in the distribution of funds to districts that are in need, I believe that as a professional educator, we need to move in that direction.
Well, thank you very much for being with us this hour, Commissioner Barry. Lots to talk about.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Virginia Barry. She was sworn in as Commissioner of Education in June of 2009. She has a 30-year history in education, has served as a teacher, a principal, and later on a professor, provost, and acting president at Plymouth State University. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Ryan Lessard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. You can join our page to continue the conversation and learn more about what we're doing every day. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.